I wanted to come back with a clarification on the models. I got a Weingard Hotel Delta 8200U, and then on the preamp I got a Lima November Alpha 400. Quick question on reference to the band and the megahertz again. Just an example. Channel 2 is still where it was. And the Weingard, HD8200U, and preamp LNA, Lima November Alpha 400. Over to you, Joe.
Okay, George, you're correct on the copy, the model number for the, I believe that's what the current preamp is. The preamp you can actually get in Home Depot. They list it on their, on their website. They carry the Channel Master antenna also, but they charge like full list price. They had a list for like $189, which is ridiculous. I bought it from Signal Source, out in, I think, Indiana. I think it's where they're based. And the antenna was like $130 plus shipping, so it was a hell of a lot cheaper. But you know, if you put that number in, the Weingard antenna number in on Google, you're going to find a bunch of different places to sell the antenna. RF Channel 2 is not occupied by CBS. What you get as RF Channel 2 is something else now. But CBS is actually at 584 to 590 megahertz on RF Channel 33. And your converter or TV would say 2-1 or 2-2. So they're up by UHF as well as probably almost all the other TV channels in New York. There's only three of them that are on VHF out of New York. RF Channel 7, RF Channel 11, and RF Channel 13. And, well, okay, you want to copy them on low band, RF Channel 3 that are coming out of New York currently. So if you got to buy an antenna, spend the money once, get good antenna wire also. I've used satellite, what do they call it, quad cable. It's right up to, like, the satellite TV service, and that's good for, like, up to 2,200 megahertz with low loss. I want to put the best line, the best antenna. If you do it once, you do it right, you'll be very, very happy. And get yourself a rotor also. The choice of the rotor, you could get...
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout, cancel.
Here's the map. They want to swing the antenna a couple of degrees one way or the other. That'll help definitely with reception. And as a plus, when the band opens up, you will have one hell of a lot of fun doing some PVDXing. Back to you, George.
Yeah, let me add a couple of words to this one now, George. When you watch over-the-air broadcast television, what comes up on your screen as CBS, New York City, Channel 2, we call that branded Channel 2. It is not on 54 to 66 to 60 megacycles anymore. It's on a UHF channel now. Almost, what Joe is telling you is that the only channels that are on their original frequency is the ones that are branded 7, 11, and 13 presently. And even that's going to change in the next couple of years. But most of the other channels, you watch something that's branded Channel 4, which used to be 60 to 66 or something like that. No, that's not the frequency it's on anymore. So there's a branded channel number. That's what comes up on your screen. But the real RF frequency, they're moving all over the place. Over-the-air broadcast 9-1 and 9-2, even the exact same branding channel number, but a slightly different dash number, they are on two different RF frequencies. So it's a little bit crazy. So when it comes to channel number, the branding number is what you see on your screen. The real RF frequency is going on in the background. Your converter supposedly has enough smarts to figure that all out. But the real RF frequency you have to find out by going to the right website or using the right kind of converter to tell you what RF frequency you're on. KD2FRU, K2RIW. Go ahead, George.
Very good information. I kind of was suspecting this, but you're pointing me with some specifics. Thank you, Joe, for confirming the model numbers on that equipment. And interesting. And thank you also, guys, for continuing. confirming the original VHF stations out of New York. Simple. We all have had charts for that for 35 years laying around. They're easy to find. And you got me curious here because I have about a 10-element log periodic that works. It'll actually handle a few hundred watts in power, but you know, that's irrelevant. About a 10-element log periodic that is good for about 100 to about 550, 600 megahertz. And I'm very, very curious to see what that is going to do to start with. For the antenna wire, I understand that antenna wire that is for satellite frequencies up to 2200 megahertz. I guess that's a good place to start. Very good. Guys, if you're going to add anything to it, I'm writing down, and I appreciate the time and the effort you're giving here with this response. KD2FYU.
I have one other thing to add to that, George.
Thank you.
Between the lead-in from the antenna to the preamp, the mass-mounted preamp, since it gets its power from downstairs and it sends DC up the line, but the lead that goes between the antenna and the preamp, in that lead, I put a filter. I put a low-pass filter. They don't even make these anymore. You probably are going to end up changing this if you look for it, but I'll explain why. I put what's called an LPF 700 meg by true spec. And the purpose of the filter was the antenna and the preamp have a response up to 800, at least the TV antenna has a response up to RF channel 69, but the preamp has a response up to channel 82. Which means it can amplify stuff all the way up to 890 megahertz. You don't want that coming into your antenna preamp and overloading it. So I put a filter in there. I put a low-pass filter in there to basically stop stuff around above 690 megahertz from coming in and overloading the preamp, because that band is starting to become very active in the 700 meg band. And the word you were looking for before, Dick, is LTE, stands for long-term evolution. That's what the 700 meg band is called, LTE. But I'm going to have to look for a lower frequency filter, low pass filter, because now when they eventually move the TV channels lower, I'm going to take that filter I have up there, the low pass filter, and move it a little down in frequency, because I don't want the other stuff coming up. But I think that's an important factor too, because I can measure with my service monitor that it made a drastic difference putting that in. It knocks a lot of the cellular stuff at 800 megahertz. Knocks it way, way down, like about the stuff at 800 megahertz and going.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
A very small insertion loss, about 690 megahertz. Back to you, Dick.
Don, good information, George. Thank you. Joe. George, you're about to do some television DXing. You're about to use either your log periodic or an antenna you're going to buy. And maybe you're going to put a preamp on it, a line-driving preamp. You're going to be mounting that how many feet above the ground, George? Let's see how serious you are going to be in your television DXing. KD2FIU, KQIW in the TechNet.
Experiment with what I have laying around, that log periodic antenna, and maybe some 75-ohm cable with a very short run, probably under 40 feet, just to see what I'm facing here. Height of the antenna, it will be indoors, 28 to 30 feet above the ground, and it will be in a third-floor doghouse gable in the front of the house. So it's really surrounded by nothing conductive. I hope the term doghouse gable on the top of the house that's sticking out of the front kind of rings a bell visually. But this is nothing. I have this laying around. I'm just going to get an idea. And from there, if I have any difference appreciable difference in seeing what I'm doing, then I'm going to start to go with the proper antenna low-pass filter and preamp. And I do understand the caution about getting into the LTE frequencies because their power coming off of the cell towers varies tremendously depending upon not only weather conditions, but also electromagnetic interferences that are occurring in the area. So their powers can go from a fraction all the way up to 10, 15, 20, or even 100 times stronger at different times, which is, that's their light. That's their business. It's their frequencies. So I can understand that blotting them out would be a good way to go. KD2FIU.
When I go to QRZ.com, KD2FIU, I see your house in Glendale. You got some nice pictures of your antenna set up. I see you're in the very close to the Brooklyn-Queens border, so I know where you're located. We now know how many feet up your antenna is going to be. And you're an ideal location to get some good digital television reception from New York City. And with a rotatable antenna on your house, however high you're going to put it, you're going to be able to look toward Connecticut and watch Hartford channels and so on. So I wonder if you're considering putting a rotator on this, George. I think if you're willing to put the rotator, I believe there's a significant advantage you'll get out of it. KD2FIU, K2RIW in the TechNet.
I got the UT-106 that's been laying around for another antenna deployment some years ago. I was not able to do, physically able to put up for a 10-meter beam. So I got the UT-106, the control box, remote, all of that. And I could easily cobble out a short 5-foot mast to put anywhere, even the tree stand, with that in that doghouse gable in the front of the house in the attic, and the antenna would sit about 28-30 feet. KD2FIU.
So by your standards, with your experience doing television DXing with a system a little bit similar to George's assembly, my guess is you can predict, Joe, that he should get some pretty nice reception with that rotator. He should be able to get Connecticut, number of channels, New York City, maybe quite a few he's going to get in New Jersey, maybe even Maryland. So make some guesses as to what you think he's going to be able to see, Joe. With A2RYY, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Depending where the gentleman exactly lives, I know if you're very close to, I think it's called Highland Boulevard, it's right next to a cemetery. There's like a very high bluff and a bunch of apartment buildings on top, and the cellular carrier is on top of that building because I've been up on top of it a few times. If you're looking into that, from that would be like maybe, could be north, maybe slightly northeast, depending on exactly where you are in Brooklyn and or Queens. That may give you a little bit of grief or aggravation trying to look us up in Connecticut, because if you're very close to that, it's going to attenuate us up in Connecticut quite severely. If you're further on south, it may have a much lesser effect, but from where you are, looking to the southwest or south, band opens up, you ought to be able to see stuff in Philadelphia or even further down. I mean, before RF Channel 20 went on the air, which has a local religious programs, on a regular, semi-regular basis, I was able to see WUNC, RF Channel 20, from the Outer Banks of North Carolina.
Over to you for some clarity on that, George. KD2FIU, K2RIW, and StuckNet.
Very good familiarity there, Joe. That is actually southwest of me. I know exactly where that is. That's Miller Avenue, near Highland Boulevard. That's southwest of me, and that is lower. That is lower than my height over here. My area is actually higher than that. So this is all sounding good, and I got a little bit to play with. But and if I'm seeing any kind of results, I'm going to go with some of the real stuff that's out there. He gave me a vendor I got that signal source and some models and a lot to look up, but running this, I have this stuff available. It's all easy. It would be inside. It's an isolated doghouse cable that's protruding on the third floor of the house, and I really appreciate all of this because the frequencies that you're giving me to work with is not exactly where I thought everything is, but it's in the range of where I can work and get some good understanding. And yet, Joe, I'm higher than that point.
As I see it, Joe, he has it made. If he's higher than that a place that you worried about as a blockage, his height of his land plus his three-story house and his gable, I think he's going to challenge the daylights out of you and me. W2RYY, T2RIW in the TechNet.
You're absolutely right, George. That's there's nothing like being on top of the hill, right, Dick? If you're going to be someplace, that's the place to be. I think you should have some excellent results from New York, and when you get that installation put in, give it a try. You may be very surprised what you pick up. And then if you can rotate it, at least what you have currently, or move it around to the northeast, you may be very surprised to see what you pick up out of Connecticut. The band opens up quite frequently. You can watch channels from Hartford semi-easily. I like TVDX. I found it to be a really fascinating thing because you know what it is when the digital signal it's either there or it's not. And with co-channel interference, you sort of have to have one really stronger than another to really be able to see it. I'll give you an example of this. Just recently, I picked up a channel from Springfield, Massachusetts on RF34, which is used by a Spanish station in New York City. And it's also the same frequency as WCAU in Philadelphia. Their DP10 is RF34. If I point southwest, the bands open up. But this station from Springfield, Mass. Is a new station. Never picked it up before. I think it's WTXX, I think, is the station call letters. So I do have a lot of fun TVDXing. It's a fascinating hobby. And it's, I think, very rewarding because it's something that takes, it's a bit of a challenge, you know, being that the stuff is digital. I've been doing TVDXing, even when I was back in the 60s. And it was great to do TVDXing when the band would open up way back then. But in the analog days, it's not like it is nowadays. Now you either get it or you don't. Way, way back when in the old analog days,
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout, cancel.
Hope for is that you catch the call letters on the half hour and one would fade out, one would fade in, and you got it. You were happy.
George, you've got it made. Of all the hams in the New York City tri-state area, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, that I know of, other than the hams who own a tower, you're about the best equipped guy I know of high land and a high house combination. As a ham radio operator, you must have carefully chosen that house, so to speak. So without a radio tower, you've got the best of all worlds for doing a VHF, UHF, ham radio, television DXing, and the television DXing you're about to do with the current system, you're going to do very well. In the next couple of years, they're converting to a system that's going to work even a little bit better when it comes to television DXing. When we go to ACS at advanced... Advanced Television Selection Committee, the Dash 3 system that's going to take place in a couple of years from now is going to give you even a little bit more range. So except for the tower owners, you're about the best equipped ham in the area we know of, George. 82FIU, you must have carefully selected that house. It took me 2 years to find my house at a little shy of 300 feet above sea level. 82FIU, K2RIW in the TechNet.
And good far ground area around me. They contain a lot of tombstones, but far area ground around me is wide open. Matter of fact, I don't even run HF amplifiers or tuners. I work only with tuned antennas, resonance antennas, and no amplifiers, and I'm pretty satisfied. So this is good. You guys are clarifying a lot of information for me. I really appreciate it, and thank you. Thank you a lot, and I'll let this move on. KD2FIU will be standing by, and once again, thank you, guys.
N2EO.
Rich recognized. Joe, if you go to KD2FIU on QRZ.com, and you go to the map around George's house, and you start zooming in, you'll see that he's almost just north of the Evergreen Cemetery, Cypress Hill Cemetery. Boy, he's in an ideal location as far as no tall buildings other than these great big mausoleums, which is very few of them. So he's ideally located for television DXing. So take a quick look at his local map and zoom in on it on QRZ.com, and you'll see how well off he is. So can you imagine, George, what would happen if you put a radio tower there? Quick question for you, George. Do you have enough land where you have the ability to put up a radio tower, a crank up, if you were really enthusiastic enough? KD2FIU, K2RW in the TechNet.
No, yes. No, I don't have enough land. No, I don't have the ability. Yes, I have the enthusiasm that if first and second was in place, I would do it. But no, the land is very small. And I was able to only get that six-band resident HF vertical. That's already too big to have. Over to you, Dick.
You'd be amazed how many people with a very small piece of land have put a crank-up tower on it. N2EO, K2RIW, Red Ridge.
Okay, Dick. I'd like to perform an idea. Remember we spoke about amateur TV, ATV. Used to be on the 440 meg band, but it's too crowded now with DMR and all the other stuff. But I would like to see the club put up a 1200 megahertz digital TV repeater. I looked at them on the internet. There's a lot of places where the clubs do that. And if we get enough people, it's easy. Much easier to get on today than it was when I was on in the 70s.
Yeah, I'm not going to try to discourage you, Rich, but I'm going to tell you what you're up against. When it comes to a digital television repeater sponsored by Limark, I may be wrong, but I think the total number of people in Limark who will be enthusiastic about that is one, a guy who lives in Massapequa Park. Maybe there's one more. With so few of the club members enthusiastic about a digital television repeater, the chances of the club sponsoring that with so little number of people wanting it, I think is very slim. So unless you can convince quite a number of guys to jump on your particular bandwagon, I think you've got a pretty uphill battle, and you can't blame Rich or K&B for not jumping on this immediately if only one or two people really are enthusiastic about it. N2EO, K2RIW, go ahead, Rich.
Oh, I realize that thing. What amazes me is that more people are not interested, because ham radio was a technical hobby. There are a number of companies that found one in Australia. It's a kit. It's only a couple hundred milliwatts, but they do have an amplifier that put out 30 watts. I'm surprised people are not interested. I always thought that building was synonymous with ham radio.
Back in my early days, where a lot of stuff had to be built, a lot of building took place. nowadays Southeast Asia makes things so inexpensively, like a Luxon and a, I can't even think of the other brand name, but these little radios that we can buy now, and Wusong and Luxon, you know what I mean, Alfang. For $30, you can buy a radio that used to be $3,000, handy talking. A little bit lower in quality, but a lot of radio for the money. Nobody wants to build for those frequencies anymore. We've been holding Steve off for a long time. I hope Steve is still with us. Sorry we've taken so long to get to you, Steve. KD2HUC, if you're still there, and I hope you are. K2RIW in the TechNet. Go ahead, Steve.
My question to you tonight is, unfortunately, the downside of TV. I have a plasma television that all kinds of aggravation on 80 meters. And what I couldn't get my arms around is that the TV is located in an addition on one side of the house on a concrete slab. And my shack and all my antenna equipment and whatnot is actually on the other side. And so it's not in close proximity. I really couldn't figure out why it would just render the band completely unusable. So, but then, as I'm doing a project redoing my basement, so let me let it drop. I noticed that whoever installed my addition decided it was a good idea to ground the receptacles by just tying a ground clamp of my house, which is a horrible idea, but from a grounding perspective. But I'm wondering, what do you think the chances are that this plasma television is pumping all kinds of noise into my plumbing system? And, you know, my big question is more of, you know, will plasma TV dump all kinds of noise into the ground conductor and whatnot? And when I reroute this thing, do I need to be, you know, do I need to take some extra steps to keep it far, far away from the radio shack? In 2HUC, back to you.
From my point of view, Steve, you've got an extremely difficult problem. When you brought your plasma TV subject to us once before on the TechNet, and by the way, don't feel bad. You're allowed to bring subjects like this up over and over again, so don't feel bad. I'm not telling you that. The way a plasma TV works is that it's got a high voltage power supply. Each of the individual pixels is really a miniature neon bulb, so to speak, and they're all making broadband noise. Your great big display screen is in a huge... Let's assume your screen is 40 or 60 inches wide, so you've got something that's a great big focal point array of noise emitters. Each of the individual pixels are making noise. The power supply, the high voltage power supply, is making noise. The wiring to that thing, the display device is in a plastic package with no shielding. So the pure radio noise emitted directly from your great big plastic installed screen with this noisy power supply, sending lots of 80-meter signals, among other frequencies, down its wiring, down your 110-volt cord, and how much of it is getting onto your plumbing, and how much of it is getting onto your household wiring. That's sort of academic. If you could build a screen room around your television set and have a feed-through filter giving you the 110-volt power and the television aerial signal into the set in a screen room, maybe you'd get away with getting rid of the 80-meter noise. Other than that, the conclusion... Let me drop... When you look at the raw noise capability of your particular plasma TV, I know you selected the plasma TV because at the time it had this beautiful, bright, high-resolution picture. But the individual pixels, the method by which they create light, is a very noisy process. Worse than a fluorescent tube, so to speak. So the chances of you making that set low enough in noise that it's not giving you an impact on 80 meters are very slim. I think Eric basically said, without you buying another TV set, there's almost no solution. In the case of electromagnetic interference, the chain is no stronger than the weakest link. By that I mean, if anything is creating a leakage, the 10 different ways that a system can create RF leakage, electromagnetic noise. And if you do a perfect job of eliminating 9 of them, the one that's left is going to give you a full blast signal, only a few dB weaker, if you know what I mean. You've got to get rid of every single possible path of the noise generation. With this great big unshielded screen, the display device in that plastic package, I don't think you stand a chance. I hope I'm wrong. I'm not trying to be discouraging, but I'm trying to tell you, trying to let you know where the minefield is located. That particular set is a broadband noise generator, DC to light, unshielded screen, unshielded power supply, noisy power supply, unshielded wiring. It's radiating all over the place, and it's academic whether or not the plumbing is adding or subtracting to it. That's just one of the 9 paths by which it's getting to your 80-meter receiver. That's what I think is going on in this particular case, Steve. KD2HUC, K2LIW in the TechNet.
I remember the conversation. That actually wasn't me. I remember making some comments on it. My TV is not even really in the house. It's actually in the kitchen. I can't even believe the level of noise that this thing is able to push through concrete. I mean, that's absolutely insane. And I wouldn't even think it was possible. If I tried broadcasting through my kilowatt amplifier, you know, from this room, I don't think I'd be able to get a signal out. I can't even imagine that these things can get pushed that kind of noise. That's incredible. I wonder even how the FCC lets it be approved like this. KD2HUC, back to that.
You and I view a concrete wall and a concrete slab as a very solid object to an 80-meter signal. That is extremely transparent, Steve. That 80-meter signal going through a poured concrete wall that's a foot thick, that 80-meter signal through the concrete wall would be attenuated 1/10 of a dB. You know, a couple of percent of attenuation, 98% of the signal would go roaring through. So concrete is a very hard, solid, thick, strong object. To an 80-meter signal, just like the trees in your backyard, an 80-meter signal, except when those trees are extremely wet, they're very transparent to 80 meters. So you think that's giving you a lot of shielding. On 80 meters, it's giving you no shielding at all. If you constructed a poured concrete wall, a foot thick, and you measured the 80-meter attenuation, you'd be amazed how much that signal goes roaring through. That is not a screen room, Steve. KD2HUC, K2LIW in the TechNet.
Wow, I had absolutely no idea. Okay. So I guess the only option is to get rid of said TV. I thought that maybe I stumbled upon a beacon of light when I realized, you know, what a horrible grounding job whoever wired this room actually did. I thought maybe that would be the path of noise, but I guess the only option is to get rid of this damn thing. All right. So another investment in the radio hobby. Get rid of noisy TVs. All right, I appreciate the help, Dick, as always. On a separate topic, I did send you an email regarding the conversation we had last week about bonding your hot water heater. I sent you a link to a kit for less than $10, if you're interested. 82HP, back to that.
Yeah, thank you, Steve, for that information. Bonding and whatever. And I was going to check on whether or not my aquastat is also being grounded or not grounded and floating. And I've gotten such a huge improvement when I isolated my hot water heater by putting a insulated coupling for the hot water in and the cold water in and the hot water out. By putting those two insulated couplings and floating the burner, my actual burner is on rubber washers, so to speak, on the 3 or 4 lugs that mount it to the oil-fired hot water heater. So So I floated most of it, and it made a huge improvement in my case for life of the heater. I mean, after 15 years or 18 years, I looked at my sacrificial rod in there. I can't think of what the rod's made out of, magnesium. It looks like the day it was brand new, absolutely untouched. And hot water heaters normally eat through the steel and start leaking after 15 or 18 years. And mine looks like the day it was made. So there's a huge advantage in floating a hot water heater. And we now know that the people with a gas burner, for a bunch of reasons, do that. And I'm now realizing that the oil-fired people are going to do that. Now, in the case of your TV set, you don't have to throw it out. Go out and buy another TV set. Let me drop.
Okay.
Dick, I have a question about this WHCVO.
Yeah, stand by, Andy. When it comes to, you're going to buy a brand new TV set, therefore you can watch, your family can watch television while you're on 80 meters. Your current set is not a bad set, just don't turn it on when you intend to use ham radio. That's all. So you're going to be buying a brand new set. But there's this huge advantage of floating a hot water heater. There's two people who signed in and wants to know more information about this. One person, I couldn't make out any calls. He said it so fast, and the machine hadn't picked up yet. And then it was Andy. Who was the first person who wants to ask another question? Give me your call letters and name, but squeeze the mic, wait a second, and then give us the information. That other person, go ahead, K2RIW in the TechNet. I got zero copy out of that. You're either speaking too loud, your signal is too weak, it was popping in and out, I heard fractions of syllables. So squeeze the mic, wait a second, speak softly, and try to give us call letters and name. Over to you, sir, K2RIW. That was absolutely zero copy. For a fraction of a syllable, twice, I heard the beginning of a human voice. The signal is much too weak, much too noisy. It's out 90% of the time, in 10% of the time. So I've got nothing out of it. You're going to have to aim the antenna better, go to a higher power. Something's going to have to change. We don't stand a chance of hearing a single word of what you're trying to say. I'm sorry to say, sir. Andy, to be 2CDL, K2RIW. Go ahead, Andy. Come here now.
Well, I got a copy now, but let me just ask my question. Let's say what I want to say. Steve, I'm curious, what is your noise floor on 75 meters with the TV set off on your S meter, and what is the noise floor when you turn the TV set on? What is the difference? I'm curious about that.
Where do you hear this? Go ahead, Steve.
I'll tell you the truth, Andy. I never actually looked at the noise meter, at the S meter on it. However, the noise is to the point where you just shut the radio off. I mean, it's just that bad. It's very, very hard to pick up anything. I have a friend of mine who pumps out a kilowatt over in Fishtown about, I don't know, maybe 3 miles away from me. We have a net that we do every Wednesday night, and it's almost impossible to hear him. It's real bad. So I never actually looked at the S meter. I'll do an experiment and I'll look, but it renders the band completely unusable.
Okay, next question I have.
Oh, hold on. Steve, when you were able to talk the family into turning off the plasma television, then your ham radio reception was essentially normal. Is that true, Steve? Over to you, Steve.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you can hear the noise. The noise just goes away. I have a similar problem with the white treadmill, which has a variable frequency drive on it. That one I was able to solve. I assume that they put some sort of some filtering on it, which was essentially not doing anything because it wasn't there was no ground on it. It looked like some schematic had some caps and whatnot for leading off noise and whatnot to ground, which is really ineffective. But I did fix that. The TV, however, just unstoppable noise, as you put it there. 82HC, that's enough.
After the beeps, you've got it, Andy.
All right, I heard that station trying to get in again. I'll get back to you, Dick. Well, actually, after the question. Yeah, do make that experiment because I am curious. I'd like to know what kind of receiver you're using, what kind of antenna you're using on 75. I want to know, just out of curiosity, all that information. But we don't have to do it now in a tech minute. If you just want to let me know some other time, because I want to study this situation. I have a similar situation with Chorus of Life, but I won't get into that now. But I do want to know what receiver, what kind of antenna, where the antenna is located, and to make a determination if this is coming definitely through the power line, which can easily be checked, or by other means. So I'm interested in that because I operate 75 a lot. But I don't own a plasma TV. So that's what I want you to find out without taking up too much tech med time. So, Dick, I'll give it back to you, and I'll get a hold of Steve later on, and we can talk about it.
I don't think you have to worry about that, Andy. You're getting into the academic details. His plasma TV is an extremely broadband, very large noise-generating system, which is located, it's in a portion of the house that's shielded by a concrete wall, which is completely transparent. What brand of 80 meter? What brand of 80 meter transceiver he's using almost doesn't matter because of this broadband noise generator. And it's on the same property with him, and therefore it's going to be giving this grief. So go ahead and answer those questions, Steve. But I think Andy's getting into the nitty-gritty. The wiring of your house, where it's located, it's on the same property, a broadband generator, in a thoroughly unshielded environment. In other words, the concrete wall is transparent on 80 meters. The set is the display device is a huge... The display device is a huge 80-meter antenna, if you know what I mean, Andy. Steve, tell him what 80-meter equipment you're using, but I almost think it doesn't matter. KD2HUC, K2RIW, go ahead, Steve.
You too, Jack.
All right, Dick, and Andy, I'm using a Yaesu 991. Is my transceiver. It's the feed line is half inch heliac. Runs from the shack out via underground to out to the corner of my yard where it goes up to a DSCC. It's about 20, 25 feet in the air. On the opposite side of the property from where the television sits. So that's pretty much what the... what the system looks like. KD2HUC, back to next.
Very fine, Steve. KD2EJ, K2RIW, go ahead, Eric.
Oh, Dick. 495, I'm working my way back towards New York. Two things. Tell Mr. RYY that there are four VHF channels. Four, 1, 2, 3, 4. The 7911 and 3, which is branded as 33. And as far as plasma goes, most of the sets actually have reasonable shielding inside them, but the row and counter columns in the plasma, because of the high voltage on the cell, make perfect square waves that are running at 1920 times a second by 180 times. When you multiply that out and get those square waves, you'll see they're 30 and run all the way up to 20 meters, which is a lot of fun. Make a real racket, and unfortunately, the row and counter columns have to, they are essentially exposed in the glass because conductive wiring that goes on there. That's like a transmitting antenna. KQRIWK.
So as you see, Andy, that plasma TV with its square waves and all of the side lobes that those square waves make at every 1900 KC up the band, DC the light to at least 20 meters, it's one hell of a 80 meter, 40 meter, 20 meter radiator, and unless you can place it a mile away from you, you're going to be getting an unacceptable amount of noise, is a good guess. W2CDL, KQRIW, go ahead, Andy.
All right, no, I understand that. But I just wanted to get a physical visualization of the layout. I don't know the antenna. You said the XCC antenna. I don't know what kind of antenna that is. Is it a dipole? Is it a vertical? I know that loop antennas can cancel noise, and there are 75 meter loops. If you want to go that route, depending on which way the loop is turned, depending on where the noise is coming from, which direction. But I think if this was my situation, I think I would make some tests to see and rule out if it's coming down through the power line, through the AC line, or if it's being radiating into the air, radiated by as you say, the plasma screen as an antenna. And again, with the antenna that I'm using, trying a different configuration. I'm not sure if it's you said he has half inch hard line. I guess if the half inch hard line goes right to a dipole, I'm assuming, unless it transitions to an antenna tuner or something, which I don't know. Anyway, just a couple of questions on that. Again, just out of curiosity. All right, Jake, back to you. But I'll continue this with Steve some other time, so I don't take up more time with this. Go ahead, W8CDO.
I don't know why you feel so bashful about this one, Andy. You are asking real ham radio questions about real ham radio equipment and a real electromagnetic interference problem to ham radio. Why can't we continue talking about it a little bit longer? When it comes to a loop antenna canceling noise, a lot of people believe that. Canceling noise, no. Polarization rejection of noise, yes. In the case of noise that really is on 80 meters, and you've got an antenna tuned to 80 meters, the antenna does not have enough intelligence to say, that's noise, and I'm not going to allow it to come into the antenna, and that's 80 meter radio, ham radio signal, and I'm going to allow that to come into the antenna. No antenna has that intelligence. If it's really on that frequency, no way in hell. Now, a loop antenna, because of its small size, and because you can mount it in various ways, you could make the loop antenna purely horizontally responsive, purely vertically polarized responsive, slant 45 polarization responsive. So the loop antenna gives the ability to select polarization, and if your source of noise was Con Ed wiring, was horizontal wiring, and most of the noise was horizontally polarized, and you make your antenna vertically polarized, and make it purely vertically polarized, you can reject a lot of the noise from polarization, but not because it's on that band, on that frequency. So loop antennas are worth pursuing, but they don't cancel noise. They just have the ability to reject the noise polarization-wise. That's a bunch of opinions on my part. Let's see if anyone wants to tell me I'm dead wrong. So make your voice known right now. K2RIW listening. TechNet. Okay, nobody gave me a rebuttal on that, so for the time being, that might be what's going on, if you know what I mean. Now, in the case of a loop antenna, there's great big horizontal, one wavelength loop antennas that people have put up on 80 meters, fed with open wire line, and if you're smart enough to use the technique that was used by Bell, K2KEY, where he made himself a fancy antenna tuner-like device where he could rotate the knobs and feed the open wire line in a fully differential manner. In other words, at one instant of time, the right wire is positive and the left wire is negative. That's the differential manner. Or he could slowly rotate the controls and slide over to common mode manner. At one half of the sine wave, RF, the right side of the open wire line is positive and the left side is positive. That's the common mode feeding. And he could slide from one to the other. And he was changing polarization, gain, angle of takeoff of the signal. So with his one wavelength loop mounted probably 40 feet in the air in his backyard in Manhattan Beach, Brooklyn, he was getting some beautiful tunable characteristics out of his full wave loop on 80 meters. Let me drop. There's another whole class of loop antennas on 80 meters, for instance, where the loop is a very small fraction of a wavelength, a small physical device in wavelength. Maybe it's 8 feet in diameter, which has got a great big tuning capacitor in there, and so it resonates beautifully on 80 meters and gives beautiful performance. The compact loop antenna. And so that's probably the one that you're referring to right now, but maybe not. Over to you, Andy. There's more than one kind of loop, and these loops canceling noise, as you can tell, I'm challenging that, but less responsive to noise because of polarization, yeah, they can do some beautiful things. To be A2CDL, K2RIW. Great, Andy.
Yeah, okay, Dick, fine. If I said cancel, no, I understand it doesn't cancel noise, but it could reject noise. Maybe that was what I meant to say if I said the word canceling. By just the way you describe, by adjusting its position, maybe even the kind of feed that it's used, that's being used on a loop, like, you know, they have what they call magnetic loops. Well, I guess it's a loop inside of a loop, which is inductively coupled, and I guess that's why they call it magnetic, as the feed point. But anyway, just a couple of ideas, and that's the reason why, you know, I was curious to know. And it's okay on the Yaesu, what do you say, FT990, I believe. And feeding it with earth and charge line, that's a pretty low loss feed line right there, especially to 75 meters. So that's a good feed line, of course. All right, I'm not bashful about asking the questions. It's just that I got to get some more information on this. Maybe by putting up a different antenna, maybe by putting up a horizontal dipole, because I'm not familiar with what he's using now, would alleviate some of the interference, not all. But again, I'm interested to know what his SV to reads noise-wise with no signal, noise floor, with no signal as compared to when he turns the TV on and he has the so-called signal.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
Hey, you can't. You timed out for the last 8 seconds there, Andy. Let me drop it. From the way Steve described his noise there in Comac, I think he's running a healthy S9 or 15 dB or S9 noise level. And so the exact noise level was 15 over 9 or S9. In either case, it's drowning out a lot of the signals that he wants to listen to on 80 meters. And whether his particular antenna is a vertical ground plane quarter wave, vertical ground plane half wave, horizontal dipole, these are minor, academic things. When the signal is, let me pick a number, his noise, from his description, I am guessing, is a healthy 40 dB stronger than the signals he wants to listen to. 40 dB would be 3S units, 3 times 16 is 18, 4 or 5 S units. He's got 40 dB more signal, more noise locally. And so if he made adjustments to his antenna, a balun on his flex cable, better shielding of the wiring going, a filter going to the TV set and so on, he could knock down that noise level 5, 10 dB. When it's 40 dB or 50 dB louder than he wants it to be, that's not a solution. to eliminate, you know, in the case of having 10 different sources of the method by which the signal can get from the noisy device into your ham radio equipment, and you eliminate 9 of them perfectly, and the 10th one is still there, you'll think the signal only got 10 dB weaker, and it's already 40 dB too strong. So he's got to attack the problem at the source, which is the TV set itself. He's either got to turn it off when he goes on 80 meters, or mount it in some other town, just putting it on the neighbor's property. Word, not foul.
Repeater, timeout.
If he put that plasma TV on his neighbor's property, I'm positive it would not solve the problem. It is such an extremely strong noise generator with a square wave power supply feeding those plasma pixels in the television screen. And when you put square waves into a plasma device, plasma, by the way, is a fancy way of saying noise generator. If you buy a microwave noise generator for your automatic noise figure indicator, you'll find out it is essentially a fluorescent tube mounted at a shallow angle in the waveguide of the noise generator. A fluorescent tube is a plasma. So a plasma-like tube makes extremely broadband noise, and that fluorescent tube in the microwave noise generator for an automatic noise figure indicator, that fluorescent tube in there is making noise at, say, 10 gigahertz, doing a beautiful job. All you've got to do is couple it to the waveguide, and that noise comes roaring out of there. So plasma itself is such a noise generator, because plasma really is arcing. The radio signal, the high voltage, is arcing through neon or some other easily ionized product, and the arc is by definition very, very noisy. So he's got to not turn on that set within a quarter mile of his house in order for him not to be drowned with the noise it's generating. You see where I'm going with that one, Andy? And you're getting into the fine details of can he knock down the signal another 5 dB when it's already 40 dB louder than he should be tolerating. That's a bunch of opinions on my part. And when he measures that noise level, that's what I think he's going to see. WA2CDL, KQRIW, go ahead, Andy.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
I heard an and which sounded like which. Okay. All right. You know, I want to start at the beginning, so let's see what the noise level is. 40 dB, that's amazing. That's a tremendous amount of noise. I can't see how something like that could even pass FCC specifications. And what happens when they have a plasma set on display in a store when they sell these things, when they did sell them, and they turn it on, and it wipes out every other radio in the store? That's what it sounds like. All right, I'm not disputing what you say, but I want to get some more information. Because it's just out of curiosity. There's no thing other to say than what I'm just saying. There's no other discussion because I don't have the information yet. So we'll end it here and then we'll move on from there. I think Rich wanted to say something too. I'm actually sitting in the car and I want to go to my next location, doing some late shopping. Back to you, Dick. Thanks for letting me in. WA2CDL. Go ahead.
Hey, it's your day, guys.
Rich and Eric, in that order, we'll get to you in a second. In order to operate that set in a television display store, they've got a roof-mounted antenna or a cable system with a line-driving preamplifier making signals that are 50 dB gained up before they're distributed to all those TV sets. Or it's a cable TV system. Most likely, almost all stores these days are cable. Very well shielded system. So although the plasma TV is a strong emitter, if they're still being sold, you can operate. See, your appliance store has got a whole lot of local noise generators. So they got to make sure that there's a potent signal from a clean source, like a roof-mounted antenna with preamplifier or cable input. They're going to have a very clean source with lots of amplification. to go into a great big power splitter to feed all those TV sets that are on display in that store in order for you to get a clean picture in order for them to be able to sell TVs. So, Rich and Eric in that order. Rich first, N2EO. Go ahead, Rich.
Okay, Dick.